there. I'm Wendy. It is that time again. Empower Radio, Conscious Living. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hopefully you're doing something exciting in your life. And if not, well, you can make that happen. Okay. I trust you are on it. I wanted to talk again. I've already talked with Shelley Kerr once before, so I'm giving you a heads up. I might have had a chance to do some homework, but this is just basically an open conversation. I found her book at Beyond Reality. And as I was doing my research for some other stuff, and I thought, whoa, this is excellent. And it's basically evidence of parallel universes, talking about experiences people have had that might defy our normal everyday concept of reality. Not mine, but mainstream, maybe. And the other thing after that, I find out she's known as the past life lady, because that's what she does. Now, she's worked with thousands of people. And I went on the website to make sure, around the world, doing all sorts of things, a leading authority on energy healing. She's worked with gems, minerals, and that's one thing my husband got me started on, was working with gemstones and different types of rocks, and understanding that they each have their own language. And that was fascinating. Well, so she does that. She's also a world-renowned past life regressionist. So some of the stories on past lives, she's had a chance to really explore, and not only that, endorsed by Dr. Raymond Moody and Brian Weiss. So, Shelley, you have pretty much done a little bit of everything, and I'm really glad that you're writing about it and sharing the stories.
Well, thanks, Wendy. It's been an adventure, to say the least, and it continues.
Okay, now, past life regression. Did you have your own experience, past life? Do you have past life memories?
Yes. Years ago, I had a regression. I had a friend who was killed in a hiking accident, and I had a regression that really helped me finally resolve some unresolved grief that had been going on for literally 9 years of my life, when I discovered that we had known each other in a past life. And I thought, wow, this was so transformational. I need to start doing this for other people.
Well, and in the book, the Beyond Reality book, and you probably, I think you've shared this story in some of your presentations, that's when you talk about the person, and you described an image that came to you when this happened, and then out of the blue, somebody shows up at one of your presentations and says, yeah, you were absolutely spot on the description of what the person was wearing. That is phenomenal.
Yeah, that was really one of the craziest times, but I've had many of those. I wrote about this first in my book, Life Stream, Journeys into Past and Future Lives, which that was the one that it was endorsed by Brian Weiss. And in the book, I talked about right after my friend passed away, I was coming home from work and I saw him in the window as an apparition wearing a white tank top and some jeans. And so fast forward at least 10 years after that, when I was out doing a presentation at a small unity church in New Mexico, and we were doing this class that I teach called Journey into Past and Future Lives. And I'm just talking about, for some reason, I decided to tell the group what the guy was wearing, and the pastor looked really super agitated during my discussion. And so we took a break, and then we were going to come back and go into the journey. And he said, hey, I need to tell you something. 10 years ago, I was out in, this happened in Bandelier, he said, I was out in Bandelier with a friend of mine when we were called to help a hiker who had fallen. And basically what I found out was that this pastor and his friend actually held my friend as he took his dying breath out on the mountain that day. And that he was indeed wearing exactly what I had seen him wearing in the window, even though nobody had ever told me or confirmed that for me on the physical plane.
See, that's what I think is fantastic. I don't believe, I think there are reasons that we connect, and you needed that information as a part of knowing that there's another part of you that made sure you were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it gets into the whole thing about these parallel worlds and the multiple dimensions and how we may or may not be receiving messages either from guides or our future selves or you talked last time with me a little bit about your mother getting a warning that saved her life. I mean, something's at work here if we can pay attention and listen.
Well, and this one was I'll just go ahead and recap that because you might have something to add to it. My mom is driving down the road and she drives a lot. That's part of the thing she's been doing forever. She visits multiple schools. And so she's on the road, you know, more than anybody else. And so what happens is she's in a car that she doesn't normally drive. It's smaller than a carpooler. And so she's in a different vehicle, which kind of gives her a little advantage in this situation. She sees a vehicle truck coming the other direction, and the truck doesn't see her as it turns, or whatever, maybe it saw her, but it turns in front of her, and she's thinking, the only way I can do this is to hit the ditch between the mailbox, do something. And the ditch isn't a nice ditch. This is going to be a massive problem. And then she's figuring out which way to go, and all of a sudden, she's beyond it, and it's behind her, and she wasn't there. So she calls me up and says, I just avoided a tragedy. And she's still basically in a state of shock, trying to figure out how what happened could have happened and how she escaped a collision. And she wanted to go back. She drives by it every day. She looks at it and she thought, maybe she should ask the person. And I said, Mom, they didn't see you. You weren't there. You weren't on their timeline. And I wanted her to draw it out for me so she'd have a diagram and I could say, look, this is what happened to my mom. This is a miracle. But it's also a time shift. If something else happened that was going on there, what's your take on that? Because that to me was one of the most incredible stories of being in a situation and then all of a sudden everything shifted.
That it is amazing. I mean, and the fact that she's totally conscious of the fact that something strange happened, she didn't just wake up later and forget completely about it, is amazing. I think she could have switched timelines. She could have, in the Beyond Reality book, I talk about like these parallel universes sitting side by side. So maybe
yeah.
She bumped off into a different universe where she was saved, or maybe a guardian angel picked her up and moved her. I mean, you know, I guess that's the thing. See, we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
But something happened here. In terms of parallel realities, I guess she might have bumped off into a new reality.
And there's so many ways you can go with that. Yeah, with at that time, whatever was going to happen wouldn't work out for everybody involved, like for the woman who actually owned the car, for the person who was going to run into her, that all the characters involved were actually necessary and it wasn't time for anybody to check out. So something else shifted and it all changed. I know that when you know, in your book, when you're talking about these different scenarios, the power of choice. I like it because you include little snippets and quotes and those, the other things that kind of remind us that we aren't the only ones who are thinking about this. There are some amazing stories. Did you have a favorite that you want to share from, and this is from the Beyond Reality, Evidence of Parallel Universes book?
Yeah. Along the lines of what happened to your mother, the one that comes to my mind is, well, there's a couple. I lived in Denver for a while, and I had we're still friends, a really great friend of mine. We used to go motorcycle riding sometimes in the summers. You'd leave Denver, and you'd go out west towards the mountains, towards the ski runs. And after I moved back to Texas, I'm from Texas, moved to Denver for a while, came back to Texas. So I was kind of in a meditative state one day when I don't normally want to say weird things to people that are going to scare him, but I just felt that I needed to give him a call and tell him, look, do you still have your motorcycle? And he said, yeah. And I said, I don't know why, but something's just telling me just to tell you to be careful. And so for some reason, he got spooked by it, not in a bad way, but he said the week before I called him, he had been in the motorcycle store picking up a light or some little part for his motorcycle. And the storekeeper said, hey, did you have an accident? Didn't you just have an accident? And he said, no, I didn't have an accident. So he just took both of these things together as some kind of a sign. And he decided to put his motorcycle away for the rest of the summer. And he didn't get it back out until the fall. And so sometime later, I was out back in Denver. I was doing some kind of seminar or something. And we got together. And so we decided, well, we'll go take a motorcycle ride. And we were going to go out toward this area, and in the vision, it was like I was kind of sitting there, and in this vision years earlier, I had seen him on the motorcycle when one of those flat-faced delivery trucks just came down those two-lane roads in the mountains and just bam, you know, that was over. And so I didn't say anything to him, but as we were driving off into the mountains, I started thinking to myself, oh my God, you know what? I think we're getting ready to pass that same curve that I had seen in my vision several years earlier. And so I didn't say anything to him. Sure enough, we go around the curve and I said, I know this is exactly where it was. And a few miles up the road, we parked the motorcycle. And when we stopped, he said, hey, that area was right back there, wasn't it? And he knew where it was, even though I never actually told him about it. So on some level, well, and on another frame of thought, you know, speaking of what you said earlier about your mother, obviously her and all parties involved, it wasn't their time to go yet. And I think that, I don't know where I first read this, but that perhaps we do have different windows in our lives where there's opportunities where we could either check out and move on to the next life or we can continue on here. And I think we make conscious choices about whether or not we choose to be here. Like he could have just pulled his motorcycle out and not listened to what I was saying. But on some level, I think the soul knows, oh, you know what? I had an exit point there and I chose to keep going.
I agree. Yeah.
What do you think?
Because not only that, he had two or three little hints there. The other person saying, well, you in an accident, you know, those, and it was a reminder of kind of like, you know, a trigger there of, are you sure? Have you made up your mind? And he might not have been sure. And then these little triggers are like, uh-oh, okay. And so he honored it and said, I'll just put it away. And then so, but the other thing is also, I think the oversoul, it is checking in occasionally as well and calling the shots from a higher plane. That's my own belief. So, well, and there's just so much that that I think goes on a level that we have amnesia about, so that we'll do our work, do our homework, and then make the choices here, thinking that I have free will, and yet there's a point where we have to, in some way, shape, or form, follow a course. I have to be here for somebody else. And I think if that's important, that I'm supposed to do something to connect with somebody else, then my free will might take a back seat at the moment because I'm obligated to follow through for a soulmate, a life partner, something, you know, I need to be there for them. And no matter what I was supposed to do, like if you're not supposed to go on a plane and yet this other person is, and you go on the plane, the other person is checking out, and you live. But you were supposed to be there to make sure to assist. Does that make sense? Okay, I think those are things that are happening on a higher plane that we have to be oblivious about so we can do our homework and so we can learn our lessons.
I completely agree with that. And actually, you're reminding me of something that I probably should talk about that I've never talked about before.
Yeah.
In the context to which we're getting ready to talk about it. When I wrote this book, basically, I was telling people, because I wrote, I'm bad at math. I got a calculator out the other day after we talked the first time, and I realized, oh my gosh, you know, this book came out 15 years ago. So that's a couple life cycles there. But
yeah,
when I first put it out, my idea was, this is along the lines of what you've just said, that we could just literally say, if I don't like what's happening in my life, I'm just going to go out and into a future memory, switch timelines, and just start doing this new thing, and it'll all work out. And then something changed that caused me to not really believe in that anymore. I was invited to be a presenter at the World Congress for Research and Regression Therapy in New Delhi, India, in March of 2006. And that is where I had a life-changing situation happen. I was checking into my room. We all had these roommates. And for some reason, my roommate started telling me that when the conference was over, she was going to travel to the south of India to have these leaves read, these nadi leaves. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this. It's a kind of astrology that was begun a couple thousand years ago in this little southern Indian town where apparently everybody in the village 2,000 years ago decided to get together and write down the soul records for all the people who lived in the village at the time. And apparently only certain people have these leaves. But for some reason, the minute she told me about it, it just hit me. I want to do this. And I said, can we, and I already had plans. I was going around for a month myself, but with a different group. And I said, is there any way we could get this done in Delhi? So we had one of our guides set up this meeting, and sure enough, we were able to go to this place where we were having our leaves read. So how this works, you walk into this room and you put your thumbprints into a on a pad, and then they go in the back and they see if they can find your soul records. And apparently Deepak Chopra had had this done in Delhi also, and it's written about in one of his books, but I don't know which book it is actually.
Okay.
So bottom line is they go back there and they look, and apparently, this is in hindsight, I did a lot of research on this, there's certain shapes to the thumbprint that tells them that your records are there, so they pull them out, and so then you have to come back the next day and have a meeting with them. Now, listen, you know, I'm telling you right now, I did not tell them my name, I did not tell them my birthday or anything, I just gave them my thumbprint, no other details required.
Okay.
So I come back the next day, they bring a stack of records out, the guy doesn't speak English, so he has an English translator, and he's going, blah, 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 you know, blah. And he'll say, okay, your name is Wendy. And I'll say, nope, that's not me. Okay, great. So he'll flip to the next one. Blah, 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 blah. Bam. And they'll start giving you facts until finally they narrow it down and they find your record. So basically what they narrowed down after the period of a few tries, he said, the guy goes, blah, 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 Mickey. And the English translator says, your father's name is Mickey. And I was like, holy guacamole. I mean, this guy doesn't even speak English. He literally pronounced my father's name. He said my mother was named after a Greek goddess, which she is, but she doesn't go by that name, and that things about my brother that nobody could have known. And so it scared me, and I thought, oh, my God, they really have my records. And so in talking to them, they really believe that our whole lives are mapped out for us and that we did this before we arrived. And so we took this back to the conference, and this started this big debate. Some people thought we were under the spell of charlatans, and other people thought this or that. And so it kind of sparked a debate about what we're talking about here. Do we have total free will to just say, I'm going to pop out into a future that I'm creating right now, and I'm in charge here? Or is someone else in charge? Or did we make up our mind before we got here? Or are there certain places along the path that we've, like you said, like we've made a divine appointment to be there, and we planned this out before we arrived.
Yes.
So I've come to know that it's probably some mix of free will mixed with these things.
Yes.
But for a long time, it slowly ate away at my confidence in what I was actually talking about. And it's really taken me many years until very, really pretty recently to finally just come to terms really on a more experiential level of the fact that I really do believe now that it's some mix between divine appointment, and then I can choose to either make things more difficult for myself or, you know, which God knows, you know, we all do it. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. And
yes.
I'm definitely good at it. We can either make it difficult or we can go with it, but there's places that we are supposed to be. And when we have these divine appointments, like what happened with your mother, there was something going on there that potentially was planned out in advance. So what do you think about any of that?
Okay, I believe that. And I also believe if the person on the other end of that accident had seen my mother and it had engaged in some way, shape, or form, it had registered, there might have been a different outcome. But since in that timeline, my mom was not visible or not relevant to that other, the other person who was involved, it didn't happen for that person. I think that when we are, when we show up and we have a certain assignment and the people who are not involved in our assignment, we don't exist. So my beliefs are a little different. It's like they're, it's like the ETs. Some people see them, some people don't. When they need to be seen, they're visible. And when they choose to be, you know, gone, or we aren't, we don't resonate, we don't have that same vibration, then we can't see them. They're not necessary for our this time out journey. And that, because I've experienced the ET thing. And so for that, I know that I can be with other people and they will have no awareness. There's nothing, they don't hear the tones, they don't smell, there are signatures. When you have that experience, the barometric pressure shifts, your smell, it's like all of a sudden you have this heightened sense of smells, and you have a, you may have a sense of your own, like a heart palpitation or a temperature rise or cooling. But when I've experienced that and that presence, it's different and it's unique and it's a signature, but not everybody is sensitive to it. And so that, for me, I know that these other kinds of experiences, like what you're talking about, when we are involved with others who are in our group and we are all learning from each other and we are all playing a role for whoever else is in our soul group, we have to show up. And I do think it's prearranged. I had one dream where I was back on the home plane in a cloud with my angel book. And I was, this is probably, you know, 90s, early 90s. And I was so thrilled because everything made sense. I'm reading my book and this is what I had planned. This is what I was supposed to do. And everything was all connecting dots. And it just made so much sense. And I'm like, thank God, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to take this back with me. So I have it in my hand and I go through this gray cloud as I'm dropping back down to the earth plane. And the problem is it will not go through that gray cloud. And I'm like, oh, this is awful. It's so, because I knew everything in that moment and I was right on track. And I, you know, plus I also had a few hints to help me out with the hard parts that were coming up. And I had to let go of it. And I was like, that is not fair. And so I come back, you know, and I thought, but I know on some level, my angel book is up there. And whether I'm, you know, deviating from course, I can't help that because I'm supposed to do it without the darn book.
Yeah, I hear you, girl. Oh my gosh, you're like, no, not my book.
I had to let go. I couldn't come back, and I had to come back, and I had to let go of the book. It was like, oh. But the memory of it and being in the soul group and knowing we were connecting, we were kind of going back over our lines and knowing that I had this information and it was important and I had a job to do and I needed to show up for it. And so with that, it was this, at least that little part was a reassurance that there are things here that won't make sense, but as long as I show up, then that's what I'm required to do. And it isn't all my idea and I'm not doing it all for me. I'm doing it because I have agreed and I have others who rely on me to do whatever it is I said I was going to do. I wish I knew more, but that's as good as it gets.
I love it. I love it. You know, yeah, the Greeks called it the river of forgetfulness that we dip into when we're born. And some people claim that they did not dip into that river and that they remember everything, but I think most of us do not remember because apparently we like challenges, I guess.
I don't think you learn if you know the ending. I think you have to let some things be unsaid and unwritten, because you know when you take a test, it isn't the same. If you cheat, you don't reconcile it. You don't integrate it. You don't expand. And so when you have to learn on your own, you have to jump through. And I work with guides. And so what they say is, you're ready, even if you're not prepared. You're ready. And it's like, well, that's not fair. But that's, again, the same thing is, in some way, shape, or form, we know, and we don't always trust that. And that's the issue. So instead of looking at something saying, oh, I can't make that, da, 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 all that angst and fear, it's like, all right, so it's on my table. What do I do with it? What do I do with it? I'm here for a reason. And then start looking for those cues, and it pushes you forward instead of sitting in a little stew going, I can't, I'm afraid, I'm not gonna.
Absolutely.
And the reason I picked your book was because I loved Beyond Reality, the Evidence of Parallel Universes. I've had these time shifts. I've had these things that didn't make sense, and yet I was shown for a reason. So I would stop assuming everybody else had the same experience and quit assuming that when I talk to somebody, they know what I'm talking about and say, do you understand? Does this make sense? So I could figure out where we were, if we were on the same game plan or the same, you know, the same timeline. And it clued me in that no matter what somebody looks like, we aren't always thinking the same thing and we don't have that same background to go from. And you've done so much exploring, so many things that you have experienced and learned from in all these sessions with your clients, that you have an extraordinary amount of information that I think is really helpful for people to learn from each other's stories.
Yeah, I think we have to learn from each other's stories because the experiences like the ones you're talking about, I mean, probably a lot of people do have them, but some people, maybe it scared them to death, and so they pushed it down into a part of their mind where they can no longer remember, and then maybe some people just are not perceptive to those kinds of things. So I think the more we share, then the more we become open to all the different things that are actually happening here, of which I don't think in this particular form that we're in, we can never understand ourselves. You know, the machine can't really see how it's functioning. We just get these little clues and these little guideposts along the way, but we're definitely here for others. We're not here for ourselves. And the more we can keep that in mind, the better we would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sometimes that's complicated. I think it's always complicated. In the book, when you're getting in here, they're talking about sending people ahead to see if an outcome would be different if they'd taken a different direction. I think is that chapter 7, or I think something like that. Anyway, that's also helpful too, because sometimes, you know, it's that thing of what if I would have done this. And a guy was talking about I'll get page 67, early retirement. And he decided he needed to go ahead and stay a little while longer. Then he got let go, and it involved a legal battle. So what if he had made a different choice and accepted the early retirement? That's what I think people would like to know. Did I make the right decision? What would have happened?
There was a lot of that in this book. And I think for the most part, pretty much everybody I talked to, when what we did was I basically regress them to the critical decision point in their life. And then instead of, knowing what they did do, which is the choice they made, I said, well, go ahead and let's imagine that you made that other choice. And then let's move forward in time and see how that works out for you. And in pretty much all of the people I talked to, they were able to say, hey, you know what? I did make the right choice. And I think that this nagging feeling of what if, or would my life be better if I had done XYZ, is something that plagues pretty much everybody. And I think it's because I'm kind of into this Buddhist philosophy now, which basically says that all beings are suffering in different ways. Nothing stays the same. So you could be madly in love with somebody one day, and that same person seems like it's not working out. So a lot of it has to do with relationships. Like, should I have married this person? Should I have not? Or should I have gone with that other person instead? Because I think that the person on some level, at this third dimensional level, we want to experience happiness. And for me personally, I think I've spent most of my career and life asking myself, why can't we be happy all of the time? Why does there need to be suffering? Why can't things just be going well all the time for us? But the truth is, they just simply can't. And so if things were wonderful for a while and now they're really not so good, the good news is everything is changing, so they're going to have to get better again. It's just only a matter of time. But during those down spells, I think that's when human nature is to say, wow, you know what? Maybe I should have done XYZ instead.
Hold on. We're going to take a break. And we're going to come back with XYZ. I'm talking with Sherilyn Kerr. Beyond Reality, Evidence of Parallel Universes. It's just amazing, the choices we have and where that might take us. Back in a few, Conscious Living on Empower Radio.
That 7 in 10 girls believe they are not good enough or don't measure up in some way. I'm Amy Poehler. You may know me from film and television, but I'm also involved off-screen, encouraging young girls to be proud of who they are. Body image breakdowns and the pressure to be perfect often causes a girl's self-esteem to plummet, but by being positive role models, we can change that. The number one wish among girls is for their parents to communicate better with them, including more frequent and more open conversations. So get involved and start talking. Begin a conversation with a girl in your life about the importance of self-esteem. Tell her why she is beautiful and set an example by avoiding negative self-talk. You can make a difference in the lives of girls, and that is no laughing matter.
This message was brought to you by American Women in Radio and Television and was made possible through the generous support of the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to raise self-esteem in girls everywhere. To learn more, go to campaignforrealbeauty.com. Thank you for making a difference.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better. And kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket. But it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place. And then they act so surprised when I find them. But I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Conscious Living and Power Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy. My guest is Shelley Kerr, and the past life lady. If you're looking for more information about Shelley's background and her work, and pastlifelady.com will connect you there. She's also on Facebook, and you can follow her on Instagram, YouTube, you know, the whole nine yards. But I wanted to get more into this time, even though we've talked about the book Parallel Universes are a huge deal for me, and I don't know how that really relates, but I just know that I experience reality a little bit differently, and sometimes there's a shift and I can pick up on it. Other times I just know that there's something happening and I'm not really sure how to reconcile it. There's one point when I'm walking through the room and I'm thinking, I really want to take a picture. I see my cat sitting on the chair looking at me. I'm thinking, gosh, she's so pretty. I want to take a picture. I've already got tons of pictures, but this is the way she's posed. It looks fantastic. And I'm walking from the kitchen to the bedroom. In this one glimpse, I see her and I think I'll take the picture. And the next second I realize as I'm out of the room, she does not wear a collar. And I had seen her as this beautiful green collar with a pink heart. And I go back in there. She's in a similar pose, and yet there's no collar. She hasn't worn a collar since she was little, and she would get out of it like a little Houdini every time I tried to put it on her. And that wasn't the picture I saw. And I realized she's about 4 foot, you know, the height that would be. And she would have to have been sitting on perched on the very top of the back of the chair to be able to assume the pose I saw. And for me, that was a screen memory or a different dimension, but it was so rapid that I had no idea. This is one of those things I don't know how to reconcile. I do know I didn't see what I thought I saw, because there's no way she could have been in that position, and she doesn't wear a collar. But somebody wanted me to know something had changed. That's the stuff I experienced, and that's why I liked your book, and that was why I was drawn to it. I wanted to know if other people had those kinds of shifts. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense to me. So you're in luck.
Good.
Yes. I'm kind of researching right now the past lives that we've shared with different pets. So when I heard your story about your cat with a different collar, I'm just wondering maybe, I mean, it could be a dimensional shift, but it also made me think, hey, maybe you've known your cat in a previous life.
Yeah. Well, and that wouldn't have been, you know, that'd be a possibility. It's just that in that moment, I went back and looked, and there was no collar. It was a different look, and I had a different sense that what I saw wasn't what was really there. It's like, you know, when they talk about the Native Americans for the first time seeing the ships on the water, and they didn't see them because they had never seen anything like that. So they just kind of blanked it out. and they were unable. It didn't exist in their vocabulary or in their encyclopedia. Yeah. So to me, it's like whatever I saw didn't. And I had another one with squirrels like that too. I'm walking down the street and I see all of a sudden there's more squirrels than I could count. I was counting 25 coming down this tree, and that's as much as I could count. And there were more. There were twice as many, and they're running across the street over to a place that I would call a wishing well. It's a little well in the back of the yard, a little park. And there were just the dog and I walking. The dog had no reaction. Like she didn't see it. And I'm seeing that they're all going down the well. What are they doing? And that was another one. There weren't 500 squirrels there. I don't know what I saw, but what I saw made me think there's a lot going on here that maybe we don't need to know because it's too much. So there you go. See? And that, is that a parallel reality? Is it a dimension shift, a time shift? That's why.
Wow.
That's why I like your stuff.
Thank you. I like your thinking. I'll tell you what, I like it. It's right along the line of where I'm at. And it's nice to find a friend out there.
What I also wanted to get into, and this is what you do. You believe that memories are stored holographically. And that's what you work with, the energy fields around the body, and saying, you know, if you can combine hypnosis with energy healing and sometimes, you know, working with the gemstones or whatever, then you can achieve a lasting change. And I believe that too.
There's no doubt in my mind now, especially after a recent experience that I just had, that thoughts really are things. We've been talking about this for years. We understand it on an intellectual level, but thoughts are things, and they really are being stored in and around the body. And recently, I went off to a 10-day silent retreat at a Buddhist monastery. Mm-hmm. And during this time, we were in the dark in a temple with the vow of silence and expected to sit still for at least an hour at a time during 8 different sittings throughout the day.
Wow.
Very difficult, incredibly painful. And the philosophy is that if you could sit there and be still through the pain, like let's say my hip's hurting or something, mm-hmm. then you get to physically experience the fact that things are changing. This pain cannot last because everything is temporal and everything is changing at every given moment. So if you hold through the pain, then sure enough, all of a sudden, pop, it'll just pop off. And sometimes there was memories attached to that. So I went through some current life stuff, saw some of my exes. Okay, hi, God bless you. You know, I've done a lot of work on that. Thank you, Lord. Not a problem. But then as the 10 days went on, it's another thing that I've been talking to people about for years, that you're peeling back layers of the onion of your soul.
Yes.
You can't expect to go, you know, become the Buddha and achieve enlightenment in one, you know, 10-minute session or whatever. This is just peeling back layers. And so over the course of the week, the memories that would be attached to pain that would start to pop off actually have a past life component. At one point, I felt a giant sword with a big hilt just go whoosh out of my back. And then I also experienced a vision where I was kind of on my yoga mat. We had different breaks throughout the day where we were supposed to be meditating in our room. So during one of my room meditations, I was on my yoga mat, kind of child's pose. My forehead is down on the mat, and I started having visions of all the times that I had ordered the guillotine to others throughout the ages and all the times that I had had the guillotine used on me.
Mm.
And so this was healing this problems that I've been having in my neck. My neck is always creaking and cracking.
Yes.
And then at some point, I felt this big piece of my neck just go quack, and it kind of popped back into place. Mm-hmm. And this just went on and on and on through the whole week until I started to feel very, very light and refreshed. And now that I'm out of that strange metaphysical stir that I was in there, you know, I still am doing my meditations all the time, and just little by little, just gradually experiencing less disruption in the physical body.
Yeah.
I had a part of my back that was always out. It doesn't crack anymore. My neck doesn't creak and crack anymore after this experience. And so more than I've ever believed it before, I now believe, and I continue to believe, the same thing I was talking about in the early 2000s when I first started writing books, that every single thing we're doing is creating some kind of a reaction. And when we have pain in the body, when we have things going on in the body, they really are linked to something from the past. And we can get inside there and heal those things.
I agree. I agree. When I first started doing this and talking about channeling and talking about my experience that I had this transcendent, complete break and started working with Nightlights, and I had did some energy sessions. I had to do 18. I actually did like every single week with a massage therapist working on the energy and shifting the vibration. And what happened was I couldn't take a deep breath. And I'm like, what the heck? What the heck? And I was just like, and it would catch. And so my throat, I would just, and so as we do this and I'm having a memory, a past life memory. And all of a sudden she says, my gosh, your head all of a sudden just got super light. Like it fell off the table. I was remembering a guillotine. I was remembering being decapitated. And at that point, what happened, I had been silenced in that lifetime. And so I didn't have my voice. And at the time I remembered being just very indignant, like what the heck, that wasn't necessary. Oh, not the exact thing you would think about. You know, you think anger. No. I was just indignant. Like, well, that was overblown. And so, but the other thing was that when that happened, and I also have a birthmark back of my neck, which is another one of those little things that I didn't even know or think about until this happened. And when it happened, though, then all of a sudden, I could take a deep breath. And it was a way of saying, okay, this lifetime, these are things I can talk about. Where it gets me, I don't know, but I can be honest. I can be open. I can release the stuff I wasn't able to deal with in at least one lifetime of my truth of, you know, this thing. And so my voice is back, but that was a big deal, that energy release. And then not only that, the physical marker that said that this had been a trauma of some kind. And it just, after that, I could take the deep breath. But I know if those issues surface, then it's something about speaking my truth or, you know, becoming forthright about an issue, that those neck issues have a lot to do with, you know, with our burdens or whatever it is we think we're being held back by. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, definitely. And I think the other thing is that, you know, people are largely afraid of their emotions because they want to stuff them down or they don't want to look at them. But what people need to realize or remember is that if you, like when you went through that memory, okay, you got the guillotine, okay? Probably too pleasant to remember it. But once you remember it, then you're able to let it go. But if you don't just go ahead and go through it, then it doesn't have anywhere to go. It needs to be released. It doesn't need to be a big trauma. Just release it. Let it go and move on.
Well, and for me, I wasn't caught in the body. It was that realization that this was a scene that I was reliving and that wasn't me. I did have the emotion of the indignant and looking at it and seeing the decapitation thing, but it was more or less a memory again to say, this is where this came from. And that would be why I felt intimidated or insecure or, you know, lacking in self-worth to talk about what I experience and knowing that it doesn't matter what somebody else thinks or says, it is my experience. And I have to, at some time in my own way, come to terms with being comfortable with my own reality. And obviously it isn't the same as a lot of other people's. So it's a little hard to be forthright about, yes, it's definitely unique, but it's real to me. And if I talk about it, maybe other people won't be so frightened or insecure or not trusting of their own different realities. I think more people have these kinds of experiences and have nowhere to go with it. And also, the sense of being shamed of, well, that's crazy. And it's like, no, that's just unique. It's a different way of being. And right now, we've got a whole lot of people here who are experiencing some incredibly unique realities.
That is for sure. That is for sure. There is a lot of unwanted emotions floating around in this universe. And so if people would open their minds to all that it's actually there, then perhaps it can help, you know, spread tolerance.
Do you recommend the 10-day the 10-day retreat, silent retreat? Because that sounds like that was a real challenge.
I can't actually recommend it to anyone because, to be honest, I've done so much work on myself that I could definitely see where if you don't do a lot of work on yourself first, you could literally have a nervous breakdown in that place. Because the first few days, you know, we only get two meals a day. We're being woken up by a gong at 4 o'clock in the morning. And afternoon, you don't get anything else to eat other than like a piece of fruit and tea and stuff. So it's a real pulling the rug out from your current reality.
Yeah.
And the first 2 days in particular, you're looking out over this grassy beauty setting. And everybody, though, all this gut, this internal garbage from the subconscious mind as well as the physical body is starting to become purged. And I mean, I looked out on this grassy, beautiful, sunny day and watched all these people walking around going, you know, we look like the night of the living dead. I thought, man, Stephen King would really have a field day with this place right now if he was here, I'm telling you.
Wow.
And I was like, this cannot be real. And then slowly over the course of the 10 days, people start to, there's some crying, there's some emoting, there's epiphanies, you know, and slowly but surely the people start to look better. And then at the last day, because I'm living in a dorm in close quarters with like 50 other women, but we're not allowed to make eye contact. We can't talk to each other. And finally on the 10th day, we're allowed to say something to people. Mm-hmm. And that it was just unbelievable because you're looking at somebody, you're not really supposed to be looking at them, but you can sense their energy. And then when you finally get to hear the voice that's attached to that person, you know, sometimes it's very surprising. And you get these real heartfelt discussions with people because you feel like, my God, you know, I think these people know me better than most people know me because they were just with me. This one girl would just, we would just sit together. And when we came out, I said, you and I have known each other in many lives. And she was from India. So of course it's very easy for her to believe that. And she said, oh yes, I know that for sure. You know, and there's no words needed, you know, because it's all being done in nonverbal. It was unbelievable. But like I said, you'd have to be in a really strong place, really, really strong to do it. I don't even know if I could have done it a year ago, but I've just throughout this life, because I'm always asking, why can't we be happy all the time? Why can't we be happy all the time? What is this in me that still quite doesn't feel like I've arrived at that place? And so that driving thing that's urging me forward to try to find the answer to that question made me want to go put myself in lockup, I guess, for a while to try to get my head screwed on straight or something. So because I want to be peaceful. And I think that the thing that I think I've been looking for ever since I first wrote that book, Beyond Reality, and all these years that I've been seeking and learning, it sounds crazy, but I really feel like I have found that in something that I have experienced there, in the idea that I've really gotten to experience that things cannot be perfect all the time and that is okay. And that even when you're in the pit of despair and you're in pain or in this case, it was physical pain, that you can see that no matter how painful it seems, you get to a place where you don't feel like you can go on anymore. But if you just hang in there long enough, that pain has to change because every cell in the body is changing every minute. And I mean, I don't know about you, I'm sure, but a lot of people listening too, I mean, I am really worried about the direction that the society is going in and how many people are just choosing to kill themselves and stuff right now. It's awful. And I just really, about a year and a half ago, I just really started looking inside myself and say, you know, I don't really feel that happy either. And so I've just been asking the question, how can we do more to make sure that people understand that things could be absolutely just the worst piece of garbage that you've ever seen in your life, but they will improve. They can improve. There's got to be hope out here. And this experience that I've had recently has just brought me into a different level of kind of understanding that I don't think I've ever really actually felt. And that's one of the reasons why I write all these books, because I'm like you. I'm out here just looking for something to bring some explanation to my mind, because I don't think the planet where I'm from, I don't think we did things like that the way we do them here. And I think maybe I was from some love and light planet where everything was wonderful all the time, but that certainly isn't the way we do it here on Earth. And I just guess I just want to maybe give people hope. I don't know that gives them hope, but I've experienced in my own physical body that I can suffer excruciating pain and I can overcome it and that things will get better. And I just want that for everybody. I just want people to find some kind of peace and happiness.
I think the thing about this is that it gives people a chance, if you do the past life stuff and you re-explore all the things that brought you here, you have a chance to maybe reconcile without getting caught up in the big picture and getting hopeless by everybody else's drama. Go back into your own story. And that's what you're doing, Shelley, is giving people a chance to refresh, renew, and reclaim their own truth. Does that make sense?
I certainly hope so, yes.
And I'm hoping that they'll connect with you. Beyond Reality is the book, but you do all the past life stuff. So pastlifelady.com, and they can connect with you today. How's that?
That'd be wonderful. Thank you so much, Wendy, for having me on the show.
I'm going to have you back. Okay. So put that, we're going to get you on the list. And thank you. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Have a wonderful day. And remember, think the best thoughts. That's what comes back to you. Doesn't get caught up in karma. See ya.